Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 241, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. As always, I am Chris Featherstone here to have some fun on this election day, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight is the night. Tonight is when we find out who is the next president of the United States. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's really don our lucha part of this nation by having the wonderful, wonderful seasoned referee, none other. And, you know, here's the thing, and I've said this before on my Raw review. This is the 241th episode. I've had announcers. I had a referee, kind of. Brad Maddox has been on my show, but I've never had an official referee, someone who has been a wrestling referee for their career as a referee, a successful referee, and had the opportunity to referee some really, really good marquee matches. So I'm really excited to talk to this person, none other than Marty Elias. How are you tonight, sir?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So almost 20 years in the referee business. What about a pro wrestling referee sparked your interest? How did you get started in the business?
I actually wanted to be in KISS, believe it or not.
Okay.
But that wasn't going to happen. You know, I just wanted to just be a part of the excitement and the whole spectacle of what is wrestling. You know, because to me, it's always been entertainment. And I think a rock show, especially a KISS show, in a wrestling show, we're very, very one and the same. You know, you got the pyrotechnics, you got the music, you have all that and everything. So that's always excited me. And even to this day, it excites me, you know, to go to a show because I don't want to see some guy get up there with a guitar or a flannel shirt and perform. I want to be entertained. And I think that's what wrestling does. But to answer the question, I got started because my little brothers used to watch wrestling. And I used to take care of them when mom and dad worked. So that's being into it early, maybe in the 80s. And so, wow, stop. So, yeah, that's how I really got into it.
Nice. So what were just different wrestlers and entertainers? I think you brought a really good point about just the entertainment factor, which is something that is missing so much, but is very, very profound in Lucha Underground. But as far as just wrestling, a lot of wrestling, a lot of mainstream wrestling, there's something that we're missing. What names, when you start watching wrestling, was very high on the entertainment scale for you?
Ric Flair.
Of course. The Nature Boy.
Ric Flair, the Nature Boy was right there because, I mean, with the robes, with the, you know, the promos and just everything about his aura, man, it was like you were entertained. I mean, you know, once he started his promos, you were there.
Yeah.
And you couldn't help not turning away. I mean, you know, because you couldn't, because he had you mesmerized.
Yeah, absolutely. Style and profiling. Absolutely.
Amen.
kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing. The limousine ride, jet flying, son of a gun. Yeah, absolutely, man.
Space Mountain.
There
Space
you go.
Mountain,
there
baby.
You go. Oldest ride, longest line.
Oh, yeah.
So what feuds do you remember of Ric Flair that was very pivotal in your wrestling career as a viewer?
Steamboat.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, that was the one that just really captivated, you know, and just grabbed me. I mean, you know, because he had some other great feuds with a lot of different people, but the Steamboat stuff. And you know what was cool was working with him and Steamboat in WWE. They would tell me time and time again they had matches that were better than the stuff that people have seen, you know. And me, I would just sit there in awe and listen to the stories.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. So you started in toward the later 90s, right? Was it 97, 98 that you started as a referee?
Yeah, I actually started training around 94-ish, uh-huh. late 95-ish. Uh-huh. Of course, I was working at the time, had a daughter to raise, married and stuff, which I still am. But I really didn't get serious about it until around 96, 97.
Okay. And what was the first match you remember reffing?
First match I ever did was in Parker, Arizona. It was Smooth Billy D versus Big Q.
Okay, nice. What promotion was that?
Empire Wrestling Federation.
Okay,
Jesse
yeah.
Hernandez and Bill Anderson at the time.
Yeah, Empire. Yeah, I'm familiar with Empire. Yeah. So how did that get you ascended as far as just the mainstream television? How was you scouted? It goes back to I guess a bigger question. How does a referee good promoter? What are different cadences? What are different things that a referee needs to do to be scouted by someone to say, we want you? Now, of course, many people know the tricks of the trade as far as the referee does more than just, you know, count out or count to three. There's some behind the scenes things, and there's some breaking that kind of behind the veil things that a lot of us know about. But what is it about a referee that promotes them or gets scouted by someone in mainstream television?
Knowing how to work.
Hmm.
You know, that's one of the things, you know, that I always prided myself on is knowing how to work. And, you know, just like you said, I mean, for me, I think most people perceive a referee as some guy they put in a striped shirt and counts 1, 2, 3. And like you said, I mean, it's a lot more detailed than that.
Yeah.
And that's the stigma, you know, unfortunately, that referees have, you know, that, well, you know, he's just a referee. No, we're not referees. We're more than that. And just knowing how to work, you know, with different styles. You know, like I've worked Japan, I've worked Mexico, I've worked WWE, I've worked independents. And just knowing styles and knowing how to work with a heel, knowing how to work with a baby face. And for me personally, it was about that squeaky wheel. You know, I probably wasn't as good as I thought I was, but I never stopped calling people. I never stopped promoting myself. I was my own promoter, and I went out there and I busted my ass. And I, can I say that? I went out there and I busted my ass.
You're cool.
Yeah. So I went out there and I did it because nobody else was going to do it for me. Mm-hmm. Although I did work for different promotions and such, I went out there and I sent VHS tapes. I would call people. I would email. And, you know, the squeaky wheel always gets heard first. And
yeah,
that's pretty much what I did. And I went out there and Nowadays, it's changed. You know, I see wrestlers or guys who want to be wrestlers, and they don't have it. And unfortunately, some people turn around and go, well, you know, you'll make a good referee. So they'll put somebody in there whose goal is to be a wrestler, but his heart isn't into being a referee. Well, me personally, my heart is in the referee. To me, I'm the greatest referee there's there that ever lived. And,
nice.
And that's stretching it, but that's just the way I feel.
That's a lot of confidence. I mean, you have – here's the thing, Marty, and you know this, you know, being in the business for 20 years, you have to have that confidence in whatever position you have. First of all, being in the professional wrestling industry, you know, is an anomaly in and of itself, as you very well know, and whatever position you fulfill in the wrestling industry, whether it's a cameraman, whether it's a ring crew, whether it's a referee, whether it's an announcer, you have to have the confidence that's needed to be able to be the best of where you're at. And I totally agree with you as far as that. Now, you know, there's been legends like Teddy Long and, Danny Davis.
Yep. Jim White.
Yeah, Jim White. Tim White. Who are some people that you remember watching or that you kind of grabbed some pointers for pursuing your career as a referee and even still now?
Three guys that I just absolutely, or actually four guys that I just absolutely adored and still like take away from them. See, because here's the thing: just as wrestlers, there are certain guys that they love and they emulate and imitate and everything. You take stuff away from certain people and you make it your own. And that's what I tell guys all the time. So for me, it was Tommy Young, Tim White, Mike Chioda, and Jimmy Corderas.
Yeah, those are great, good four really good ones. And especially Tommy White back in the NWA days. He's legendary.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and Charles Robinson to this day has still a lot of Tommy's traits.
Yeah.
Because Charles loved. And, you know, there's some of the things, you know, that I see Charles do, and I go, well, okay, yeah. And I still pick up, and I still learn from watching Charles or even watching Chad Patton, and even Jack Doan when I was there. Jack Doan took me under his wing at WWE and says, hey, you know, this is how we do it here. And I'm, oh, okay. So, you know, it's one of those things, figuring it out.
Yeah, Tommy White was, man, he was the king of knowing how to sell that dusty finish. He was the man in knowing how to do that, and a lot of people criticize the dusty finish now. Of course, if people don't know what the dusty finish is, you may, as a journalist and as a fan, I know what it is, but as a ref who actually have been part of having to do the quote unquote dusty finish, I think maybe you can explain it to the viewers more than I can. What is a dusty finish entail of, Marty, from a referee standpoint?
A dusty finish, from a referee standpoint, is doing your job. Yeah.
Yeah, and that job, of course, you know, is kind of faking the. You know, you can come in as whenever you want. Usually the dusty finish means that there's a count, a referee misses it or gets knocked out. And, you know, there's a three count and there's basically a win gets yanked somehow and the referee is involved in that.
And with the dusty finish, it's all about timing. It's all about,
right.
You know, knowing where you need to be, you know, your count and stuff, you know. So, of course, you know, but I've been involved with many of the dusty finishes and, you know, they're all unique to what they are in storyline wise.
Exactly.
But for me personally, it was always about timing and always about being in the right place at the right time and selling it, you know, with your facials or just whatever, or getting knocked out or whatever the case was, you know, but it's always about selling it. It's always about being at the right place at the right time and
exactly.
timing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is there one or two that you can remember vividly?
For me personally?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I mean, to be honest, nothing stands out right now. I mean, I haven't had my coffee, so I'm still trying to
there you
wake
go.
Up.
Yeah.
But no, unfortunately, no, it doesn't.
Oh, no, it's okay. Now, let's get into, before we get into your career in WWE, let's just get into matches, period. What are some of the matches that you can just remember kind of being a fan? Because I know that you, as a referee, you're just honed and locked in on your job and making sure that it's, like you said, timing is everything and just that it's excellently done. But how is it as a referee just from a fan standpoint? Because when you see good matches, especially when you're participating in a good match, say like a Undertaker Michaels WrestleMania match, it's one of those things that it's amazing to be a ref, and it's amazing to just witness and be in the same ring, you know. And like, you know, when Charles Robinson was I think it was Charles Robinson. It may have been. I think it was Kyoto. I think it was Kyoto that was in the match between Brock Lesnar and the Big Show when the ring collapsed. That was Kyoto, right? I believe he was in
there. It was SmackDown.
Yep. So Kyoto was there, and you know, just being a part and just the rush and the energy of the crowd. How is that being a ref and a fan within a match? Just that energy and the rush. How important is the crowd during a match?
Crowd is very important, you know, because crowd can dictate where the match is going to go, you know, because a lot of the old school guys, you know, they'd call it in the ring more times than not, you know, like they would have a finish and everything else was just about feel, you know, and the audience. And it's funny because referees, for me personally, I'm able to gauge a crowd. I mean, if I'm a curtain jerker or a main event or whatever, I'm still able to gauge a crowd. But one of the most important things that Shawn Michaels taught me as a referee is to know the audience. Because if you have somebody sitting in the front row and they're sitting back in their chair leaning, that means you don't have them. But if they're leaning forward and they're really looking at it, that means you got them. So it's always awesome to sit and look at a crowd to see how people are sitting in their seats.
Yeah.
Because that can gauge if you got them or not.
Yeah, that's a really good point. What other pointers have you gotten from wrestlers? And, you know, what particular wrestlers gave you some just different pointers as far as, you know, because, you know, you, like you said, you have your part in the match. You're always the third person in the match. And the wrestlers has, you know, they have their part as far as calling a match. How does that work with you as a ref as far as what the wrestlers call? If they already have the match plans, I've interviewed – I don't know how many wrestlers I've interviewed so far, but I've interviewed a ton of wrestlers. Is it a matter of them already knowing their match, which some have told me they either already know or call it on the fly? Which is easier for you as a ref, when people know their match and they kind of let you know? Or is it, you know, calling on the fly? How does that work for you as a ref as far as making sure that it's synchronized?
Either or, but I prefer calling it on the fly because I love the improvisation of a wrestling match, you know, because once again, it goes back to the crowd and feeling the crowd and stuff and getting that certain reaction. But for me, you know, when I hear guys, and I've been a part of it, guys will put point A, point B, point whatever, and it's just, okay, you know, all right, well, you're putting the match here like that. Just give me the finish.
Yeah.
And that's what I'll do. And, of course, you know, I'll sit there and I'll listen to the match because, for me personally, one of the things that I started a long time ago when I first started, I'll actually visualize the match in my head as people are talking about it, and I'll just know in my head where I need to be. Whether it be false finishes or I'm not seeing something or whatever. So I'll see the match in my head. It sounds stupid, but I really see the matches in my head. And so I know where my positioning needs to be. But more times than not, I'll go to guys and I'll go, hey, let's finish. Let's end with the finish. And hey, let's rock and roll. Let's go.
So, again, it gets to the point of just us as spectators not knowing the importance of the referee spot, because even if, especially if it's called on the fly, which you as a veteran prefer that just because of just the energy that comes with that. But it would seem like a rookie referee would want to know as many spots as possible to make sure that he's positioned right to make the count. Because again, it gets to the point where us as spectators don't understand how just those little subtleties of you being in the right position, because you never know. You might be on the other end of the ring, and you know, and then someone does a match, does a big spot, and pins them, and you're already, you know, a second and a half away from them, and that little second and a half can cause a boo from the crowd because you're not at your spot, you know, immediately. So it you know, yeah. A lot of people don't understand that.
Yeah, and you know, for me, one of the things that I learned a long time ago is be there but not be there.
Hmm.
And as a referee, you're there to enhance the match, not take away from the match. And at this point, you know, I see a lot of different wrestling stuff, and of course, people tell me about it too. But one of the things that I've noticed too is that, you know, a lot of referees like to get their stuff in, and they like to get noticed and stuff. Whereas me, this is probably my second or third interview I've ever done in my life. I'm not that guy to go out there and get all the glory. Because the boys are the ones who are in there working. I'm there to enhance it. I'm there to help them enhance it and be there but not be there. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And now, you know, to me, I just think it's a lot different. You know, and referees aren't learning how to work. And what I mean by that is learning, you know, how to work with a heel, how to work with a baby face, you know, being there for them, communicating, whether it be time cues or spots or whatever. You know, just knowing how to work as a referee and not take it away from the match, enhance it, take it away from it.
Yeah. How would you, like, what advice would you give a rookie referee or even a veteran that has some cue issues with working with faces and working with heels? I've noticed you've mentioned that multiple times in this interview, just really raises the importance of it. What does it mean to work with a baby face and a heel as a referee? What is the distinction?
Well, for example, working with a heel, let's say a heel has a baby face in the corner, and more times than not, referees will start their counts. 1, 2, 3, 4. You're killing that heel's heat because you're not giving them time, or you're not giving the fans time, enough time to absorb what he's doing.
Soak that in.
You know? So when you're sitting there and you're giving that count fast like that, you're not giving that heel enough time to communicate with the audience. You know, 1, boom, 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 and come on, get back. What I like to do is I like to give guys the Iggy. I'll give them the Iggy and get back. And then because, again, learning that 5 count in the corner, that should be like a last resort. And at the same time, you're working with them. You're jaw jacking with the heel. That gives him something to jaw jack with you about, and it just shows that he's a heel.
Yeah, it draws the heat.
And it draws the heat. And if he's sitting there pounding on the baby face, and you're pulling out that count real fast, you're killing the heat right there. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I see a lot of people make the mistakes, and I shouldn't say a lot of people, a lot of referees make the mistake of counting way too fast in the corner with a heel and not working with them.
Wow, that is fantastic advice. Yeah, that's, and again, you don't notice that as a fan, but looking at it now, it makes perfect sense to kind of give it a longer count. And it makes sense to me as well as far as the actual count out. You know, because we always wonder, you know, it's one of those things like, what is breaking the count? Like, when was that adopted? That doesn't even really make sense. But, you know, from a referee standpoint, just to really kind of expand the narrative of the match, you know, breaking the count, so to speak, does help from a referee standpoint. I think the cadence of the counting has a lot to do with just really seeing the ebbs and the flows and just really kind of gauging the match. As the referee, is this match very intense? Is the crowd still in it? I guess that kind of elicits to you a slower 10 count. Am I correct on that?
Absolutely. When there's a double down, I'll go down and I'll check guys. And Kyoto taught me this trick. Mm-hmm. You know, you go down and you check on the guys because, A, they may be calling a spot or you need to communicate to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they're taking their time. Or they're trying to regroup and go, okay, where are we at?
Yeah.
So when you're doing your counts, I like to give a beat or two in between my counts and kind of just at the same time, it's all visual facials and stuff like that, dramatize it. Oh my God, these guys aren't going to get up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts the drama. And then here comes the count. And then there's the beat. So it gives people enough time and it gives the crowd like, oh my God, he's going to get up. He's going to get up. That helps enhance the match. And there you go.
Absolutely. So just kind of, I'll ask this as a blanket question. Just describe your overall tenure in the WWE. Let the viewers know, let the listeners know, rather, you know, how many years were you there? You know, good takeaways that you got from it. You were released in 2009, I believe. What kind of prompted that, and what did you learn?
I learned how to be a great referee is what I learned, because I had a bunch of great teachers there. I mean, I had Arn Anderson, Dean Malenko, Ricky Steamboat, Hunter, Sean. I had Vince McMahon. I mean, I had Jim Ross. I mean, I had a lot of great teachers there. And guys like Ricky Steamboat, who actually took me aside and worked with me. Although Steamboat was a wrestler, he knew how to work, and he taught me a lot. Shawn Michaels, I mean, I love Shawn to death, and Shawn taught me how to be a great referee. Arn Anderson, you know, in car rides with riding with Arn Anderson, I would ask him specific questions, and he would tell me stuff as far as what he liked and disliked with referees, and, you know, just learning from that. The other thing, WWE, I lived my dream. I was able to travel the world. I was able to work with the greatest people in the world, and I got paid doing it. So I was there for 3 years, and it was an absolute blast. I got nothing bad to say about WWE, although I know some people will go, hey, you know, this and that and everything. Look, I mean, if there's anything bad to say, I'm not going to tell anybody, you know, because they don't need to know. That's between me and whoever. But WWE was a dream come true. I know a lot of guys are striving to do that. I from what I've heard, it's a lot more difficult to get there. But it was great, man. I got to live the dream. And when you get to live your dream, I mean, you get to do something that a lot of people don't get to do. And I've been blessed to do that.
That's awesome, man. It really is. Now, you say you were at WWE for 3 years, right?
3 years, correct.
Yeah. How did you get that spot? I mean, you did some work with AWF. What other work did you do to lead you to a spot with the WWE?
Oh man, I did a lot of independent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Japan and I worked for 01 with Hashimoto when he was running it. So, you know, I pride myself on doing that, whereas a lot of referees, gaijins, aren't able to go over in Japan and work because they're just referees, you know?
Yeah.
But I was able to go do that, and I was able to work all over the country. And I would literally show up at WWF shows, WWE shows, and say, I'm here. And like I said earlier, the squeaky wheel, I would send videos, I would send tapes, I would get people's numbers, emails, and I would just call them. And I'm not advising people to do that today, but that's the way it worked for me back then. But I was literally just, like I said, my biggest cheerleader, my biggest supporter. And finally, WWE took notice, and I was able to do dark matches with them and such. And then at one point, before they signed me, they actually had me go out on the road with them, and I did SmackDown and I did Raw live events and such. And then ultimately they came back and they offered me a deal, and I signed it, you know, without even blinking. And I was with WWE.
That's awesome. So the time you were there, what was the most memorable match you ever ref there?
Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, WrestleMania 25, match of the year 2009.
Yeah, that's that match was, like I mentioned that you did before. Yeah, that match was absolutely incredible. So, yeah, I've been watching wrestling 30 years, and that was over 30 years, and that was one of my favorites of all time, absolutely. So let everybody know about your time with Lucha Underground and how that experience has been, and where can they catch it?
Well, Lucha Underground has been such a joy to be a part of. I mean, we really didn't expect the following, or, you know, the folks to gravitate to it like they have. To us, it's become a cult following. I've known Krista Joseph for a long time. course, working with him at WWE and such. Anyway, I remember Chris reaching out to me and talking about some show that he was going to interview with. It was a wrestling show, and he asked me if I'd be interested in helping him out if he got the job. And at the time, you know, I was done with wrestling. I was over it. And he said, come on, Marty, you know, we're boys. And I go, yeah, DJ, too. All right, yeah, I'll do it. So I took a leap of faith, not knowing what it was. And then a few months later, you know, I was called again, and I was told what it was and such and everything. And then I went to L.A., and I talked to people, and I signed a deal. And then, you know, we started our tapings, and it's just been such a ride. You know, I keep telling my wife, Suzanne, I'm afraid that somebody's going to pinch me and say, okay, Marty, it's a dream. Wake up. You know, this isn't happening. It was all a dream. Lucha Underground never happened, you know, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's just been such a joy to be a part of this promotion and this TV show that has just taken the world by storm.
Absolutely. And you talk about your theatrics and your character, and you, there you go, right there. So, absolutely. So you can catch it on the LRA Network. Any other promotion for Lucha Underground as well as your social media?
Yeah, LRA Network every Wednesday night at 8 p.m., DirecTV, Sling, Hulu. And actually, if you're behind on Lucha Underground, you can actually go to iTunes and you can pick up all seasons there. And
didn't know
that. For our social medias, so we got season one, season two. And after the episodes air on those Wednesdays, that following Thursday, that episode is up on iTunes. So, you know, we're about 9 episodes into season 3, so you can pick that up too, so you can catch up.
Fantastic.
And, you know, get mesmerized by what Lucha Underground is all about.
Oh, yeah, it's a great promotion. I've interviewed Son of Havoc and Prince Puma, and both of them
awesome.
were great,
great
guests.
Great talents.
Oh, yeah. Great,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so as far as social media is concerned, on Twitter, Marty Elias, 1967. Facebook is Marty Elias. And on Instagram, at Marty Elias 67.
Fantastic. Marty, it's been a pleasure. You surely don't seem like you've only had 3 interviews in your illustrious career, man. Yeah, very, very seasoned, very poised. And I just was soaking in just the knowledge that you have as a referee from being, you know, a nearly 20-year vet. A 20-year vet as far as just the training and everything is included. So, I think this interview, you know, I've had 50, 60 interviews, and I think this one is going to really touch me and the listeners the most, just because it really gives the opportunity for us to really break just the stigma when it comes to refs and really appreciate their position a lot more than they deserve. So I appreciate all the awesome wisdom you've given us as a referee tonight, man.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. You know, I've enjoyed this. You know, I love being a referee. It's what I wanted to do. It was something that I looked in the mirror one day and said, look, you know, how can I contribute to the business? Because people tend to forget that referees are fans of the business too.
Yep.
We love the business. We love everything about it. We want to do whatever we can to be a part of it and succeed. And the stigma, like I said, oh, he's just a referee. No, we're not. We're more than that. So to my referee brothers like Charles Robinson, Jimmy Corderas, Mike Chioda, Jack Doan, you know, Rick Knox, Justin Borden, you know, all my boys, you know, I love all these guys, and we're a big team. We're a bunch of zebras, Scott Armstrong, you know, I mean, we're all zebras, man, and we love this business more than anybody will ever know.
Awesome. Again, you can catch them at Marty Elias, MartyElias, 1967, and Lucha Ground every Wednesday, 8 p.m., LRA Network. It's been a pleasure. Marty, thanks so much for your time.
Anytime. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bring what you got. The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at it.
4 corners. 3. On mine. Let's go. The whole squad is making it clear we taking this year. You know who we are, but you don't know why we here. So this is where the big boys play. These big boys play like who defies the living God? Get out the big boys' way. Outsiders with the swoop in. We live as kings. You see in us, but our third man waits in the wings. And when the time is right, we shock him with the proper attack. I go for Dolo, but ain't solo. Cut the promo in black. Hollywood, Hendrix, Frizzle, pinning them to the mat.
And I'm Dash Wunderkin with the strength of 100 men, with one intent to see the will fulfilled of the one who sent his son to give himself. But you rap about your gas and your rags torture, white coffins when I drop a bomb. My mic's awesome, never lost faith. You in all space, you can all skate, suffer but never crippled. No bin walls in my cross face. From here to Saturday, raving, anticipating. I was frostbit, now I am glacier, mixed with some Vader. Get to hawking with these animals, using God for my defense. In Alabama, we jamming. That's beautiful, Bobby Eaton, me and Priest. We the dangerous alliance, nah, the Harlem Heat. Tie the do-rag before we do battle. You're talking sheep, you all what you speak. That's too sweet.
Till the genre is took back, we repping that wolf pack. The foundation's shaking, no mistaking, yeah, we shook that. Trust in God, we trust, pushing forward, never look back. Meekness ain't at all weakness, some people mistook that. Stamping out this crook rap, he turning the power on the razor's edge. Leg drop after a power bomb. Tired of the lies, man, we bringing the truth through. Diligent and fruitful, the owners in our group too. It's good to be king, sold out, this war is brutal.
We playing them war games, our army go move too. You crew, I'm in the Raptors with a bat in my hand, and stand to shatter all your plans so they don't matter. In the grand scheme, it's that easy. We tag teaming, Steiner brothers, we love it. Demand the win, establish it, this the clash of the champions.
This is where the big boys play, huh? We ain't here to play.
Episode 241, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are having some fun tonight. We are continuing to have a live election coverage. We're starting a live election coverage. We're going to continue that throughout the duration of the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Right now, it's a neck and neck. It's a very, very tight tie. Donald Trump just projected to win Florida. And now he has over 200 electoral votes. So without further ado, we have a lot to talk about. And, of course, we're going to get into headlines here in just a moment. But, of course, we're going to stop what we're doing at any time due to any new projections. So let's bring on, without further ado, Todd Fisher. How are you tonight, sir?
Oh, my gosh. Could this be any crazier, this election?
Man, they're doing the numbers now. Right now, it looks like 269 to 268 for Trump. That's what it may all pan out.
Well, it's funny is I'm watching television like a schizophrenic between CNN, Fox, and MSNBC. Uh-huh. MSNBC is they're the funniest. They are refusing to call any even stuff that CNN's already called for Trump. They're
right.
Too close to call, dude. 99% of Florida's in. You can call it.
Yeah.
They still haven't called Florida over on NBC. But Fox has called Georgia, has officially called Georgia for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That just happened moments ago. So
right
now, Fox has Trump at 254, Clinton at 209. So it all has come down to
Clinton
New
just
Hampshire.
Got washed. So she's over 200 now, yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to come down between New Hampshire or Michigan. Is going to be the two to really watch. And Michigan's getting really tight. But here's the problem. Here's the problem with the tightening. The one county where she needs to make up just isn't. It's almost done. It's almost completed there. So they're. You know, that's Wade County and the one right above it, where Detroit and Flint is. They're at I think 87% reported, and he's got a wide enough margin. She's just not going to be able to make up the difference in Michigan.
It
doesn't look that way.
Yeah, they haven't called that one yet. Right now, it's still tight. Looks like she's up in Maine. But yeah, right now it's Trump's up 7 points, 216 to 209. So,
per CNN.
Wow. Yeah.
But
per CNN.
CNN hasn't called Georgia, and they haven't called Utah or Nevada yet.
In all fairness, I think out of all of them, CNN is probably the most neutral between MSNBC and Fox News, because as you're saying, which makes it
there's
which
a
makes
reason why they call it Clinton News Network.
Well, no, that's not a reason. Well, that's the reason why you call them the Clinton News Network. And like I said, if out of the three projections that we have as far as the accuracy with states are concerned, I do have to give a major kudos to John King. As I mean, I've been following CNN as far as election coverage for a few elections now, and I usually don't pay attention to Fox News or to MSNBC because they're ready. As much as MSNBC is not ready to call a state, Fox Sports, they call a state, you know, at a drop of a hat. So, Fox News, they call a state at a drop of a hat. So, but yeah, it's a tight race. It's a very nail biting race, and definitely kudos to the Trump campaign to resurge the past few days. I think that Trump has shown that, you know, his kind of last minute resurgence has helped substantially with the same day voters. If this was an early voting contest, Clinton would knock it out the park based on the numbers that came in from Florida. But the same day voters really pulled out for Trump.
Well, I think this goes a lot to what I've said the past couple weeks and some things that you poo-pooed on my what I've said, that they were, you know, the polls showing that Clinton was just so far ahead and it's completely unwinnable by Trump. I mean, there's a little bit of it that goes to the Comey coming out and restarting the investigation. I'm sure some of that goes to that, but a lot of it goes to, I think, they really oversampled their polls towards disheartened. I don't know if it was to intentionally dishearten the Republicans, but they oversampled, and they showed that, oh, yeah, Hillary's got this in the bag. So it's either to dishearten the Republicans, or it gave Clintonites an overconfidence where they're like, we don't need to come out. It's, no big deal. She's got it. And they're paying for it right now.
Well, that was after the excess Hollywood tapes, and even, you know, some Clinton surrogates went up to like a 9-11 point jump. They weren't very confident in that because they felt like that was a very skewed number. Now, when it came to 3 points, it's been 3 points over the past week or so, that's when both of the campaigns – you know, they upped their ground game as far as going to North Carolina and Michigan, Obama going to Ann Arbor. And I think because the CNN poll had it within 3 points, and that's usually within a margin of error when it comes to polls. And so the fact that it's neck and neck now is no surprise to me because of that margin of error factor. So basically it was a tie. And right now, Trump is up by about 7 electoral votes as of now. So yeah, it's very interesting, and it seems like New Hampshire actually may be. Who would have thought that New Hampshire would have so much power tonight?
Well, New Hampshire has always done its own thing. It's always gone its own way. It's not a definitive. It's an anomaly in the New England area, where traditionally New England goes Democrat. I mean, it's just the way it is. But New Hampshire's always been the one that can go
swings, yeah.
Republican.
It's like a pendulum.
It's very much, yeah, it's very much, you know, screw you guys. I'm going
yeah.
home.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, of course, like I said, it's up to the minute coverage here, the Pancakes and Power Slam show on episode 241. Yeah, so, of course, like I said, we're going to follow our format as much as possible tonight. But, you know, at any moment we can stop and make a projection. We really appreciate, first of all, we really appreciate everyone who, there is another projection. I think they're about to call Georgia. Yep. So CNN went ahead and called Georgia. And so that brings, that's 16 more votes. That brings his lead up, to 25. It's getting closer. He's at 232 now to 209. So it looks like 232 and then Michigan is still not called yet. So 232. He's inching away, man. It's but there's still a bunch of states. There's still a bunch of states that are not called yet.
If they call Michigan or New Hampshire for him, it's done. If he gets either of those.
Yeah, I think
her likely states aren't enough. And let me just say this real quick to everyone that's listening. Regardless of who you voted for, or regardless who you supported or who you're hoping to win tonight, do us all a favor, because this is something I vowed this morning that I was going to do, you know, tomorrow. When you get on social media, don't be that person that's gloating.
Yeah.
And don't be that person that's whiny either if your particular chosen candidate lost. You know, I'm a huge anti-Hillary fan, but you know what? I would have given her the benefit of the doubt at first. I would have given her the chance. I'd like to think. I'm hoping I don't have to do that. But I would give her the chance and congratulate the other side. You know, your candidate won. Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Although I am looking forward to tweeting directly to Amy Schumer and a few other celebrities that vowed to go to Canada if Trump wins, and, you know, start a GoFundMe to help pay for the tickets. But so be nice to one another, love one another.
I totally agree with that. Real quick, Clinton's inching in Michigan as of now. Looks like Wisconsin. Yeah, it looks like Wisconsin's probably going to be called any moment now, but looks like Clinton may. Looks like maybe those Detroit numbers are coming in, which she's only 40, a little under 41,000 under. So yeah, you know, there's some may swing over to her way based on this resurgence that she's closing in. So that might be. This is fun times, man. Fun times, and I totally agree with you because I made a Facebook live after I left the voting booth, and you know, I am without shame to tell you one of my deep Christian roots, my deep Christian devotion, and I just couldn't rest in my spirit. I just couldn't rest in my laurels that either candidate is worthy of my vote. So I voted for Jesus, not for a cliche standpoint, but the fact that I am putting. Putting that in God's hands as far as who's the next president, and I'm going to pray for the president, whoever he or she is. That was the reason why I voted for Jesus, because that's who I'm going to rest my laurels on as far as who's the next president, whether it's Donald Trump, whether it's Hillary Clinton. It's for me to pray for either one of them and take it as that. So, I left I left the voting booth with an incredibly clear conscience, because I realized after I voted, and I prayed that the burden is not mine to be so caught up in who won, but the fact that I did vote is what I'm happy about. And I was happy that I voted for local issues. Those were very important to me. I think we have some good issues, some very good issues as far as where our tax money is going to go. Whether you agree or disagree, I think that they are some very good issues to raise up as far as local is concerned, as far as Ohio is concerned as well for the position from a office standpoint statewide. So I voted, and I think it was important for me to do so. And I can rest, like I said, I can rest on my laurels that it is my job to pray for whoever's in office, and understand that this is a knockdown, drag out dogfight, as we clearly see from tonight. And that's this is a very, very ferocious match we're seeing tonight.
It's a Hell in a Cell match for the president.
Yeah, with color. It's the one. It's the gory one, not the PG one. Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into headlines. Here we go. Former WCW World Heavyweight Champion Vader car flips around, involved in a near fatal car accident. Definitely saw the pictures. I posted the picture of the car on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page, and I also I saw the pictures that he posted as far as just the bruises on his face. Thank God that he's still alive and we can see more Vader bombs.
I don't even want to imagine a world without Vader. I just don't.
He was the one who put, they got a key race alert here. Looks like Michigan's tightening up. It's went down about 9,000 votes. With a little over 60 out, so it went down 9,000. Wisconsin still favoring Trump by almost 90,000 votes. For all of those who are listening, you're probably looking at some type of political, but it's still tight in Arizona, 61%, lower 57,000 for Donald Trump. And then New Hampshire is still tight, only a little under 11,000 up by Trump with about 70% out. Now, those are, as a journalist, I have to source, and those are numbers according to CNN. Trump, of course, we figured, just about everybody figured he was going to win Iowa, although Clinton had an early lead. Pennsylvania is getting closer. Clinton's up 40,000. 85% of the vote in. So the smaller counties, and then it looks like based on the numbers that are in, Hillary Clinton may be projected to win Nevada. So, and then Evan McMillan, the Mormon independent from Utah, calls Hillary Clinton Utah to a degree, as far as at least the tightness of it.
He stole that from Hillary Clinton.
Yes. Yeah, Evan McMillan has ruined a state for Hillary Clinton. Just like,
heaven help
I believe.
Me. Heaven help me. I don't hate much, but I hate Hillary Clinton. What I wouldn't give to be a fly in the room to watch, just to see her as they told her that she's been called Utah because of this Mormon guy who's a complete independent. If she hasn't had strokes before, she's having one now.
Yeah, she's probably literally cussing out Evan McMillan right now because she needs, obviously, from tonight's closeness. She needs every single state imaginable. And Evan McMillan just basically yanked Utah from her. So I found it hilarious. I mean, he said, I've looked at some articles on McMillan, and I've looked at some interviews, and, you know, he said basically he finds both of them to be unfit. So he purposely went into Utah as an independent to play spoiler. So I find that fascinating.
And the only person he's spoiling is Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, exactly. Because Trump's going to win Utah and Evan McMillan. Yeah. So that's quite interesting. All right. So Robbie E and Kurt Angle and their wives, of course, they welcome children. Kurt Angle welcomes his fifth child, his family's fourth child with his wife Giovanni. With family's third child. And his fifth child, Robbie E, welcomes, and his wife, Tara, welcomes a set of twins. I had Robbie E on my show a few months ago, and he was saying how his wife was pregnant and they were expecting. And congratulations to the E children and the Angles.
Congratulations.
Absolutely. Scott Hall was apparently missing. He is believed to be missing after no-showing an indie event. Diamond Dallas Page said he believes it's okay, but his son Cody doesn't know where he is, according to Twitter. On both accounts, I reported this actually on SportsKita. What's going on with Scott Hall, man? It seems like this may be a relapse. You know, people don't want to look too much into it, but we haven't had much updates other than, you know, he no-showed the event. He has another indie event scheduled for the 19th next weekend. So here's hoping that he show up for that indie event. It's actually an indie event promoted by Global Force Wrestling. So, I mean, it's sad. I watched Scott Hall's DVD, and you know, it just really seems like he was on a very, very, very good track. And unfortunately, you know, we can't say too much as far as what happened. There's nothing in stone as far as what has happened. But, you know, there was an incident a few weeks ago when he was at an airport drunk. There was an incident earlier this year. I believe late last year, somewhere around that, where he was drunk at an indie show. So, you know, he's allowing his demons to get back to him, and he's getting so many good opportunities with coaching. You know, helping out with coaching in NXT. They didn't sign him they didn't give him a permanent spot yet, but he has been coming up and coaching the kids in NXT, and seems like there are some really good things going for him, man. But he can't shake them off. It appears.
Well, and here's the thing: as a child of parents who were both addicts, and as someone who has struggled with addictions in my own personal life, we have to be careful not to, you know, condemn him or whatnot, and just make sure that he gets the support and love to get back on the path and get back on, you know, where he needs to be, get back to healing.
Yeah, let's hope so, because it really seems like there's a lot of good things in store for Scott Hall when he's clean. So, you know, he just, you know, my philosophy is if you think you can do it yourself, you'll fail every time. So let's hope that he can't. Let's hope that he feels that he really needs help from a divine perspective. So Billy Corgan. Corgan stated the TNA lied about him giving money and time. There were some deadlines that they had to pay him. Otherwise, he was going to turn his loan into stock. 30% share, 36%, I believe, share of the company. As of now, they haven't paid them back, and that was last week. Anthem, a parent company of the Fight Network, is now running things as far as giving them money, being basically their bank account, and taking over from an executive standpoint as well. I think this is the first time since her being in charge that she has a minority share of the company. She's still doing some, you know, she's still kind of leading the pack from an executive standpoint regarding the talent is concerned, but from an overarching standpoint, she's on the bottom. I mean, she's going lower on the totem pole, doesn't have majority stock. So it seems like she's doing her best to try to keep the company afloat. But as we saw by the tweet from Mike Bennett a couple of weeks ago, the talent, the morale isn't very high in TNA, based on the direction in their future.
Not to mention, broken Matt's not broken so much anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Spoiler.
But would you use Matt Hardy would you bring him in WWE if you were a talent relations executive? Would you bring him in as that character? Or, you know, here's the problem with that. I guess while I'm asking this question, that would technically be gimmick infringement. So Broken Matt, unless it's his creation, unless he made it. But from what we know, Corgan had a lot to do with that. So I guess he can't really legally bring it in at all unless it's 100% his character.
And that might be part of what's going on right now with him. You know, he's taken the bump where he lost his memory of being broken, and he's owning it again like he did with the broken part. And so he can go and move on to maybe go back to WWE or ROH or something as Matt Hardy. And then, you know, sure, he does the broken thing again, but just doesn't call himself broken. Sort of like Brother Ray and Brother Devon. You know?
And it's sad, too. It's very, very sad because this was by far one of the best, if not the best, moments in Matt Hardy's history. It's amazing how he could just totally grab a gimmick and just make it his own and take it way over, because I'm sure you and I could both say, and as far as and as well as a whole lot of other people could say, that we were very critical of this broken Matt Hardy character. For me, not necessarily because of the character, but because it was a character in TNA, and TNA is just damaged goods to me. I don't think it would go too far in the company, but it transcended the company. I mean, there were reports that people were actually there were people who was watching it from the WWE, kind of behind the cameras, because they were competing in the same area around the time of the Final Deletion match. So, you know, it was way over, but we knew that there was Corbin's character. So that's the issue. You know, that's when apparently, like you said, it doesn't seem like we're going to get Broken Matt Hardy anymore, which was one of the best things going in TNA. And then, of course, you know, Decay was another thing. There's some, you know, there's been reports that theme songs that were really cool are being dubbed out now because of it's Corbin's, they're Corbin songs. The Corbin made the songs. So along with Broken Matt Hardy, which is the best thing you got going TNA, Decay, which is up there, and the theme songs, I mean, what makes it not another generic show?
It really isn't. It's just another generic wrestling show.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is sad.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. You know, you and I both absolutely love ROH. And, you know, I have made no secret to my love of ROH. For a while there,
Trump just jumped
in
Pennsylvania, by the way.
What's that?
Trump just jumped in Pennsylvania, by the way.
Yeah, I saw that he went up a little bit. They still haven't called it for him yet, but
no,
that's insane.
Yet. Still 10%. There's still 10% left.
That's insane though, because she had Pennsylvania on a lock. He might go
same day voters.
Bell Path.
Yeah, there's still one county that's yet to be counted yet, though, and
counted.
It's a Democratic county, so he's only up about 8,000 votes. So So very, you're right. It's insane. Regardless, first of all, the very fact that Pennsylvania is this close is you know. Oh, okay. There's still a quarter of one other big blue county. There's still 75% of another big blue county that hasn't been counted yet. So,
projection.
Iowa. Yeah.
I know they called Iowa. Yeah.
Iowa. Yeah. I figured that he called. I mean, yeah. I figured he went Iowa. But yeah, you were talking about the TNA.
But it was for a while there. I always when I ranked them, as far as production value, storytelling. The whole nine, it was always WWE, and then TNA, and then the young upstart Lucha Underground, always back and forth a little bit, with ROH being a pure wrestling show. Not a lot of storyline, but now ROH has definitely jumped TNA to where they're telling, more complex stories with their matches, especially with the introduction, with Bullet Club coming in last year, and now they're starting to really introduce some of the other factions that are big in New Japan and down in Mexico with the Los Ignobles and Chaos. I mean, I always heard about Chaos, but never quite understood, okay, what is Chaos? Who is Chaos? I didn't know what Bullet Club is. And it was always, these foreigners that were coming into New Japan. That's where the Bullet Club came from, kind of like NWO type of stuff. But now they're starting to really expound upon that, and getting some names that people here in the United States may never have heard of before now.
Like Evil. Yeah.
Yeah, and well, now Will Ospreay is going to be showing up in ROH.
Yeah.
So that's going to be awesome.
Yep.
And if you haven't
and then we've got
one,
Cody.
Check out Cody.
We got Cody coming up at a final battle. Yep. So. Yeah, it's ROH has always been a stable company, man. I mean, they really have. For 14 years, they've been in existence as long as ROH. Same year, actually, 2002. And I mean, it's very, very interesting stuff. And it just really goes to show if you stay in your lane, and your niche, that's basically where it goes. You don't. So they actually started about 3 weeks earlier than TNA. So, they're actually an older company technically, but they're pretty stable.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. All right, and finally we got Brock Lesnar admitting that he did not care about his WrestleMania match. I wrote this on Sportskeeda. We saw this on the video package on Raw. This is very interesting to me because it basically states the inevitable to me. It was already a glaring observation. You could already tell that. But I mean, both Goldberg and Lesnar didn't really care about WrestleMania 20 because it was both their last match, but for Lesnar to basically admit that, I find it fascinating just because it was something that we already knew, but at the same time, them say that, the very fact that they let him say that, which is pretty funny to me.
Well, and I'm still at the point where I just don't care about that match. I'm just
really
the more I think about it, they have booked themselves into a corner. I mean, okay, do you have Lesnar go over Goldberg? And Goldberg's probably everyone at this point agrees that Goldberg's probably a lock to the Hall of Fame this year. So do you put Goldberg down and squash him while promoting the video game and then set him up for the Hall of Fame? We can't really do that because that takes away that revenue stream. But you can't have him beat Lesnar either, who you've just built to the point where who can beat Lesnar at this point? Man, at this point, who could possibly beat Lesnar by the way they booked him? They've booked him too big. And anyone who beats him, it's going to be – I can't even imagine the monster that they would have to get to even be a credible fight for Lesnar at this point.
Yeah.
Braun Strowman, maybe?
I don't – no.
Size-wise, but skill, definitely not.
I don't think you'd see, and that's the issue that I have just with wrestling, period. You know, he's got a match coming up with Rusev in Mexico. You know, they're both two strong heels, and they're being booked as two strong heels. Why would they just throw a match between Lesnar and Rusev together with two heels in Mexico? It doesn't make any sense to me. I cannot stand, you know, just the creative team feeling. By the way, Gary Johnson is yanking Michigan away from Hillary Clinton. He's got a little over 3% of the vote, and Clinton's down 0.5% now. So kudos to Gary Johnson for yanking away Michigan for it's not over. There's still 10% left, and Clinton's actually closing the gap. But at the same time, you know, Gary Johnson has over 3% of the vote. So, of course, that is talk about your spoiler. That's even a bigger spoiler than Evan McMillan.
Well, the true sad thing to me on that one is once it became clear Trump was going to become the Republican nominee, I really started looking at the Libertarian Party because I didn't want to vote for Trump. Mm-hmm. But then they put up Gary Johnson, who, in fact, is the least libertarian that has ever libertarian. He resembles nothing of what you would expect a libertarian to be.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's
more
he
Democrat than he is libertarian.
Exactly. I was just about to say that. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So
very much.
I wanted to be able to. And you know what? If he would have been a strong libertarian, a true libertarian, what you think of as a libertarian, that's where my vote probably would have gone. I would have been part of that 1%.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you've got the spoilers, man. And like I said, Evan McMillan for Utah and definitely Gary Johnson for Michigan. If Trump keeps that 0.5% in Michigan, which it seems like Clinton may edge him. Based on the trend that's going on right now, and they may split Wisconsin and Michigan. But, you know, if they split Wisconsin and Michigan, it looks like they'll probably split Arizona and Nevada as well. Man, Colorado, I think they called that for Clinton already.
Yeah, they called that for Clinton a while back. Well,
yeah.
Here's the other really important thing that's coming tonight, too, that we haven't talked about at all, is right now, as it stands right now, can hold on to the House and the Senate.
Yes, that's what I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
Rubio did a fantastic job in Florida. Paul Ryan
and our own Rob Portman did really well.
Rob Portman did very well in Ohio. Yeah, like I said, Paul Ryan won a seat. So yeah, it's that's good. that's good. So if that would. That would be upsetting for the actual – I think Hillary jumped up. Okay, so Trump is about 20 – he was about 40 up.
23,000
heads up. So now he's 23,000. 78% with Wisconsin, a little over 90. I think that'll probably be projected for his. They'll probably call that any moment now. 63%, a little under 60,000. Arizona's still close. Actually, it went less in favor of Clinton, so it may be a batch of voters there. Neck and neck in New Hampshire, 5,100 votes with 77% up now. Actually, it just went lesser for Clinton, just got a little bit more votes. So
it was funny when earlier tonight when you sent me the show notes of when show notes of what we want to go down by. You're like, oh, you know, by midnight the race should be called. We should have an idea of who's going to be president. No, we don't.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, it's. But yeah, this is to me it's fun. This is fun stuff. This is incredibly fun stuff. Trump, he jumped ahead in Pennsylvania, but he's losing voters. He's losing losing the advantage in Pennsylvania. Looks like Clinton may get Nevada. So
Clinton should get Nevada. Yeah, and he's gonna pick up Utah and Arizona.
Oh yeah. Certainly, yeah. Looks like Minnesota's Clinton's way. So, yeah, I mean, it looks like New Hampshire, as of now, it looks like New Hampshire is indeed going to be the deciding. The deciding state, because right now, like they said, based on all the projections, looks like it's going to be 268 to 269. And then with New Hampshire going, and basically it's neck and neck in New Hampshire, that will be the – looks like that's going to be the deciding state, man.
And I think it's so close it's going to go into automatic recount. We may fact, know tonight.
Yeah, it looks like based on New Hampshire's numbers, it looks like we'll probably know sometime in the morning or afternoon, so – wow, what an election. This is the first time we've covered the election. This is your last week with us. What a way to end out your time with a bang. Before we get to the flavor of the week, Todd, I do want to thank you as my friend, as my colleague. I've had a great few weeks with you here on the show, man, covering politics. A great addition to the Pancakes and Power Slam show by someone who I know who is as avid in politics as I am. And this live coverage is fantastic. And because four years ago, actually, the Pancakes and Power Slam show was around. So I didn't cover any politics on the previous election, 2012. We were about 7 months old. But yeah, since I have some time, since I'm able to expand my show and you know, get some good advertising and things like that with my show, I think adding the political piece was fantastic. And doing it with you as a co-host was a pleasure.
Well, and I've had nothing but fun doing it, and it's really made me step up my game to make sure I'm looking at everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not just looking at one side or the other, not just, you know, and staying out of that echo chamber. And it's something I've tried to warn all of my friends, you know, both liberal and conservative, stay out of the echo chamber. Don't listen to just, you know, stuff that reinforces the ideas that you have. Look at it all.
Very true.
At all of it. You know, so you can get a better view of it. Because you step back, take a better view of it. You know, it's not quite what you think it is. Ever.
Yeah, I agree.
So,
especially with politics, because it's, you know, and here's the thing. I'm an apologist. We've had this apologist conversation, interestingly. I'm an apologist for my faith. So basically, as an apologist, I study other faiths. I can confidently say, sitting at my booth, that I know a lot about other faiths, even more than some people who confess them. Even, you know, I've had conversations with other faiths and say, you know, but what about this? What about that? And they didn't even know what I was talking about. So with that being said, it's important to, you know, in order to strengthen or even question, you know, what you believe in, I think that it's important to look at all angles of it and you know it strengthens it to look on the other side. And for one, it confirms that you know why you reject other options, and two, it gives you more of a passion for what you believe in. So on an objective scale, you know that deals with religion, but when it comes to politics, it's basically the same template.
Absolutely. Agree with you 100%.
Indeed. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Indeed. Let's get to the flavor of the week.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, as we get to this very incredibly neck-to-neck presidential election, which I surely will probably be watching for at least the next 2 hours. let's talk about something patriotic. I chose to use Kurt Angle as the patriotic figure for the flavor of the week this week. You know, because he is one of the most patriotic figures. We had a top five of that. We both agreed that Kurt Angle is up there as one of the top. So the question on the table for you, Todd, and for me to discuss as well, we got about 5 minutes left here in the show. Will Kurt Angle return to WrestleMania 23? Will it be a segment? Will it be a general manager, commissioner, or something like that role? Will it be a match? If it's a match, who is it? Or is it just wishful thinking to believe that Kurt Angle will return?
You know, I love Kurt Angle. I love what he did in WWE. I'm not so much a fan of his TNA days, but whatever. I would love to see him come in and be like a manager type of role where, you know, he could still go if, you know, push came to shove. He could still take some of those light bumps that a manager takes and be very effective at it, or even, you know, cheat the win kind of thing. And start have him start the New Age Varsity Club with some full on shooters like the American Alphas, Shelton Benjamin, you know, bring him back, because I believe he's on the path to recovery from surgery on his shoulders, you know, and start that whole with Angle, and have him lead a team. Of those kind of, you know, wrestlers of that caliber and that style, instead of seeing him come back in a prominent in-ring role. I just think one of the things I'm kind of tired of is guys who are clearly past their prime, days are behind them, like Goldberg. And I'm sorry, I know this is going to bother you, but like Sting. I love seeing Sting in the WWE ring. Let's face it, his best days were 10 years ago or more.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'd much rather see Angle come in, and because he's got the chops to do the stuff on the mic and to just be that character. He doesn't have to tell his story in the ring anymore because he does have that ability. And not to mention, come on, how much fun would it be to go back to the chanting, "You suck. You suck. I don't suck." I miss those.
I think those days are gone, or long gone. Long gone. Hillary Clinton just jumped up in New Hampshire. Looks like she was trending. She was trending a lead. It's only 18 votes, but. Wow, man, what an election, Todd Fisher. the swing state, the state
vote.
18, man. yeah, this is insane. That those 18 votes may be what decides the election.
Everyone run and hide now. The purge starts in a few hours.
And let me tell you something, Todd, and all the listeners as well, man. You know, I got really excited about this day. I placed this on my Facebook, and I'm going to say this real quick. I apologize for everyone who listens to the show for Raw and SmackDown reviews. Matter of fact,
wait,
give me
SmackDown
10 seconds of what you thought. Yeah, right. Give me 10 seconds of what you thought of Raw and SmackDown just so we can cover that.
Raw was okay. I haven't even watched SmackDown yet. It's on my DVR. I've been watching election stuff all night. I'm not even going to lie.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I've been switching back and forth. I've been covering it live on my Facebook page. But yeah, I did manage to watch SmackDown. I fast forward a chunk of it, to be honest with you. They want to protect Alexa Bliss. Raw was decent. I had my Raw review already. And then as far as SmackDown is concerned, I'm wondering why they decided to take Corbin out and put Shane in. I think maybe the star power, maybe that was not well received backstage. We'll find that out. As far as Kurt Angle, I think that we'll get Kurt Angle back. I'm not sure about WrestleMania 23, but I'm sure he'll be back. If WrestleMania 23, I would love to see Angle versus Rusev or Angle versus Wyatt. So, and like I said before, we've got about 30 seconds here. You know, I was appalled at the two candidates that we had as president. Very much so. But I'll put on my Facebook, as a political journalist, I am absolutely pumped. And numbers like this, I'm not happy with either candidate, but as a political journalist, I absolutely love this. Clinton's trending up in New Hampshire with 99, about 100 votes up. So, all right. So, Todd, it's been a pleasure. You know, this isn't the last time you'll be on the show. And you know, it's been a great month and a half with you, and looking forward to having you on the show again, man. It's been greatly a pleasure.
It's been a blast, and keep posting on my Twitter feed, and which is at Bike Todd. Check out my podcast's Facebook page. We have some interesting developments coming soon. We're currently taking a small creative hiatus as we retool and rethink some things.
Yeah.
Looks like Donald Trump is trending back up in Michigan now.
Yep.
You can find us at Off the Ropes Podcast.
Indeed. God bless you all and have a good night. Bye-bye.